हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे. Okay, so Sri Brahma Samhita, then text 39. Ramadi Murti Shukala Niyamena Tishtan Nanavatara Makarod Bhuvaneshu Kintu. Krishna Swayam Samabhavat Paramah Pumanyo Govindamari Purusham Tamahang Pajami. I worship the Supreme Lord Govinda, who, though appearing in the worlds in eternal form such as Rama and Nrisimha and other characteristic powers, also appears personally in the Supreme Form of Krishna with the most attractive pastimes. The Govinda prayers follow the same overall pattern as verses 1 through 28. That means before they start. From the description of the subtle spiritual plane, working down gradually to the gross material realm. So far we have heard about Govinda, his beautiful form, inconceivable qualities, and sublime pastimes, as well as the transcendental qualifications required to experience them. Now we hear of Govinda's avatars, his sojourns in the quadrantal corner of creation. Sometimes Govinda also appears in the material world through one of his expansions. That is expressed in this verse. So that quote was from Digdarshani Tika 339. Although this verse is about all the avatars, this verse of special mention are the Paravasta forms who originate from beyond the Paravyoma, the realm beyond the Viraja. Quote, his subjective portions as the avatars, namely Rama, etc., appear from Vaikuntha, and his own form, Krishna, manifests himself with Vraja in this world, from Goloka. The underlying sense is that Krishna Chandra, identical with Krishna himself, Krishna Chaitanya, excuse me, also brings about by his appearance the direct manifestation of God in himself, Paramasamhita 539 purport. The above mentioned descents are the most human in character, exhibiting superior degrees of sweetness to the Avesha forms. Right, so he's saying that he's coming in and manifesting his different avatars. And then here they're mentioning specifically the ones that are connected with Goloka. You know, so Krishna himself will be, then, you know, the Dwarka forms, then Rama, Krishna, Narasimha, Balaram, and they mentioned Night, and Lord Chaitanya. Then these are all going to be the forms that are expanding from the upper portions of Goloka. And then, you know, not Braj itself, but, you know, I mean, Braj is Krishna and Balaram. Then you're going to have Nrisimha, Rama. Lord Chaitanya is also then has that mood of Braja Krishna, so Navadvipa is non-different. And then you're going to have so many other forms that are taking particular qualities of Krishna to establish some very nice pastime and some very nice attractive features so that the devotees may be attracted. So sometimes Govinda also appears in the material world through one of his expansions. So then, you know, just that occasion that these happen. So you're talking about that the pastimes in Goloka, then that's going to be the main feature. Main feature is going to be about Krishna interacting with his devotees. then you're going to have, for those living entities in the material world, then Krishna occasionally appears himself or through his expansions to invite the living entities back to the spiritual realm, because that's the natural position of the living entities, is to be fixed and functioning within the spiritual realm. But unfortunately, because they've removed Krishna from their life, then they come to this material world, which is then going to be based on the external features, right? I mean, it's in the spiritual world, the primary and secondary, you don't have to make a distinction, because in the pastimes and expressing their affection, their sthayi bhava for Krishna, then naturally they're going to have a particular form. There's going to be particular situations and particular activities that most naturally express that sthayi bhava. So because it's all 100% focused on Krishna, one doesn't have to make the distinction between primary and secondary, right? But it's the primary that's the main aspect. It's the relationship between Krishna and devotees. So that's why it's sthayi. It's always fixed. Then the secondary features, those may change according to the various situations. And, you know, sometimes they're in the village, sometimes they're in the forest. You know, sometimes in the forest by the river or by Govardhan Hill, or, you know, so there'll be variation there. But the sthayi bhava, the mood that they have in that relationship with Krishna, then that always remains the same. And then all the other elements that are there to support those pastimes, and then the tertiary items to then support all that, you know, in which they can go on. In other words, you have the overall environment, you have the specific activity of the devotee, then you're going to have the specific relationship with the devotee. So, yeah. So Mother Yashoda, then she has her relationship with Krishna. Then that's expressed, you know, predominantly in Nanda Bhavan, and, you know, the surrounding areas that she would naturally move with, you know, the village of Braj. And then you're going to have the overall environment of Vrindavan, in which all the different facilities for all the pastimes are accommodated, right? So you're always going to have these three features. But of that, it's the primary of that particular relationship with Krishna that makes it the prominent aspect. And then the others are in support of that. So when the living entity comes to the material world and they give up that relationship with Krishna, but because they want to be Krishna, they want to keep all the secondary and tertiary elements, but for themselves. They think that those are going to be enjoyable on their own, right? Because when you're dealing with these secondary and tertiary elements, because they are the internal potency, and because they're expanding from Krishna, then they're naturally going to have some kind of experience that's there. It's not the predominant thing, you know, because when you're dealing with Satchitananda, then they all have all the different things together. You know, the sattva is there, the eternity is there. But there's also action, which is eternal, and experience, which is eternal, right? In knowledge, you're going to have the knowledge that's there, but you also have knowledge in, you know, knowing the relationship and knowledge in how to please Krishna. In pleasing Krishna, you're going to have the activities that please and the situations in which you can perform those activities to please. So you're always going to have a connection between all three. It's just which one's prominent. So if you're not focused on Krishna, on pleasing him as Bhagavan, then it doesn't mean that the environments in which you're functioning and the activities you're performing don't have, you know, some element of knowledge and some element of bliss to them. But that's not the main point. So the living entity falsely then thinks that this is nice, this is good, and they unfortunately are not attracted to going beyond that into serving Krishna as Bhagavan. So using those secondary and tertiary items to please Krishna in a loving relationship with him, so then they just get stuck with those elements. So then those secondary and tertiary. Then in the material world, where you just have, where it doesn't look like Krishna's here, But you know, his Bhagawan feature is not. It means only when he comes as in his avatar and everything, then you see the Bhagawan feature. Otherwise, here in the material world, you basically see the Brahman feature is the prominent, and then there's a touch of the Paramatman, which he controls and maintains and destroys this creation. And so then the living entities also then here think, yes, there's something in all these things we're doing. But because you've removed it from its natural form of being always there for serving Krishna, then it doesn't carry the ananda that it will in the spiritual realm that one could get distracted by. There's the idea, no, this will make me happy, when it doesn't, right? Because it's unconscious. We're conscious, so we relate with, you know, one relates, birds of a feather flock together. So the soul's natural position is on the platform of spiritual with soul, other souls serving Krishna. So here is that the living entities, you see, they come together. But the problem is that the forms of interaction then don't have any consciousness. And so there's no satisfaction in that for the living entity. So Krishna then comes as his avatars and then brings in that Bhagavan feature where now you're working with what his energies, the inferior energies here, but there it's a reflection, so it naturally still has that secondary and tertiary features. And now he comes as Bhagavan, and now you're adding the primary feature. And then seeing Krishna in these concepts and pastimes here in the material world, then one can become inspired, and then one may want to then take up devotional service and now add the actual primary feature back into life. And then from that primary feature, then you can again, then, you know, elevate yourself back to the spiritual realm. Right? Is that good? Okay. So text 40. Brahman, the boundary wall of Vaikuntha. I worship the Supreme Lord Govinda, whose powerful form radiates an effulgence known as the undifferentiated, unlimited, all-encompassing Brahman, which is completely distinct from its powers displayed in unlimited planets throughout billions of universes. Until now, Brahma's prayers have concerned themselves mostly with Bhagavan, realization of the Lord. This verse and the next, on the other hand, deal with his Brahman aspect. We learn how Brahman, the cherished goal of the jnanis, is but a mere extension of Krishna's personal magnificence. Quote, "The mundane universe created by Maya is one of the infinite external manifestations accommodating space, time, and gross things. The impersonal aspect of Godhead, the non-differentiated Brahman, is far above this principle of mundane creation. But even the non-differentiated Brahman is only the external effulgence emanating from the boundary wall of the transcendental realm of Vaikuntha, displaying the quadrangle, the triquadrantal glory of Govinda." Brahma Samhita 554, 540 purport. So the triquadrantal will be the spiritual world, right? While just the what did he use for the other one? Uniquadrantal. Okay, that's one. Yes, please.
Vishnu, Maharaj, I had one question about this previous verse explanation. You get that when we say that, like, the Varnashrama is on the level of Paramatma, like, let's say, this performing duties, but when there's like incarnation, there's Lord Chaitanya incarnation, there's Sankirtan movement that is like Bhagavan, and then devotees using that for the different Varnashrama positions for the service of the Lord, this becomes Bhagavan level.
Means it's in touch with Bhagavan, so it takes on that, but it's to that degree that you're seeing it in that way, it takes on that quality. You know, just like if you light a candle, it will create some heat. You light a fire, then there'll be more heat.
Yes.
Right? So the point is that the spiritual world means then it is that completely absorbed in the Bhagavan feature. Right? So then you have that there. In the material world, you can have a mix where you're starting with that. You know, there's some interest in that. That's why you can have different devotees and different living entities all together at one point, and they all are getting different experiences, right? You know, it's like when Krishna enters the arena, in the wrestling arena in Mathura, then we see that he is seen by so many different people in different ways, right? Depending upon their realization, you know, either within the transcendental or within the, you know, a mix of the mundane or just the mundane, and then depending on what modes they're in. Or in Vrindavan, then you see is that all the devotees are there together, so each one of them is going to see them according to their own particular rasa. Even though he's together and all the Vrajavasis together, but each one's going to be a seeing according to their flavor. Right? Is that so?
Yes.
You're going to have that you're dealing means there's a hope to get the transcendental, I mean to get happiness. But as we see is actual means you don't have exactly what you call sustainable happiness in the material world. What you have can have is that can be, you know, pretty stable is satisfaction, right? In other words, happiness is the experience of gaining something you haven't had that you've wanted. That's called happiness. Satisfaction is being comfortable with what you have, right? It doesn't require getting something new. So that means you're dealing more with the present with satisfaction, right? About what's in the present, that's all right. Happiness is what's in the future you're bringing to the present. And that moment it comes to the present, that moment is called happiness. But if you don't, aren't satisfied, it will move into the past, right? So that happiness then becomes something that was before something expected. Then it goes into the past. Satisfaction is what's there now, that's fine. So satisfaction is then from the mode of goodness. Mode of passion is you're wanting something and then getting it in the happiness. And the mode of ignorance is you can't actually tell what's happy and what's not happy. Right? Because you just that ignorance, you can't tell properly what's going on. So then the Varnashram, if you're following it was Naishkarmya, that's going to be the highest form of the of performance of duties. And so you're doing those without attachment to the result. And you're doing them because that's what should be done. That situation in goodness. And that also then brings about that element of satisfaction. Mm-hmm. So the best possible outcome you can get in the material world is the mode of goodness and that sense of satisfaction. Mm-hmm. But if you're doing the duties, not because you're doing it, so you're acting in goodness, but you're actually doing it for the material benefit you'll get, then it'll be mixed with passion. And because you identify with the, you know, some feature of the material world, there's some ignorance also, but predominantly goodness, so then it will you'll get results. So the idea is the Varnashram is just the platform from which you're functioning. And you're performing those activities. Yes, you could say within Varnashram, it's the duties, but you're doing that to please Krishna. So your Varnashram, you're identifying as the soul, but you see, I have a particular condition, nature, and situation I'm in. I'll use that for Krishna, right? Then I perform the activities in that, and then I do that for pleasing Krishna, and then there's Krishna's status. So pleasing Krishna is the actual goal. Because in other times, you see, people may want to go to the heavenly planets, but they know they have to worship and please Vishnu. So they're acting to please Vishnu, right? Following the rules and all that. But the goal is is not, the ultimate goal is to go to the heavenly planet. So the goal of pleasing Vishnu is only a temporary step on the way to getting what they want. You see, that'll be the difference between that. Because an activity, passion, and goodness can look the same. But the actual difference is in the end game. Now what is it there? So there is, you got the results so you could get more. And the other one is that you're getting results because those are for Krishna. So that'll be the difference, right? So always acting that it's just for this, then that will be, you know, the natural state. And so that's where you can act and it's for Krishna, so that it's that position of sannyas then is there. Means the mentality that I'm doing this for Krishna. So then that keeps it in nice karma, so that keeps it very nicely there. I'm doing it because it's my work, I get the result, I give it to Krishna, then that might have the aspect of there'll be some passion there that I'm trying to get something for myself. But I'm going to give that to Krishna. So then it has that mixed aspect. Does that make sense? But because it's being given to Krishna, one gets purified, and then, you know, one is more inclined to just working for Krishna. So with time, it just becomes more and more. So we see is that the varnashram will be the tertiary aspect of the equation. And then for us, then the pancharatrika will be the secondary, right? We're using, though it's connected to Krishna, it's all activities that are connected to Krishna, but we're doing it because it pleases the Lord himself, right, as a person. Right, so that's the advantage of using these systems, because one, it situates yourself in goodness, because if you're in goodness, it's easier to move up than it is in passion or ignorance. Ignorance is not of any great value at all. You know, it's like animals, okay, they like to eat, and, you know, but they're doing that as an animal. So if you feed them prasad, you know, and they hear kirtan, they'll advance. But it's not really due to any good quality themselves. You're engaging their nature to eat in Krishna's service. You know what I'm saying? But it's not necessarily that they have the consciousness that that's what they want to do. Right? Mm-hmm. So you're engaging the nature and that in Krishna's service, but it's with the consciousness that you want to please Krishna. Mm-hmm. Right? So it'll have that aspect of devotion. So it's about Bhagavan. These other features, Prabhupada and Paramatma, there's what we work with. But for the devotees, they see them in context that Krishna is making these arrangements. So all these features of Brahman and Paramatma are actually Krishna's features that he's arranged. But he does it like we see here. He expands, you know, he expands his avatars. So therefore, as Garbhodakshaya Vishnu and Kiradakshaya Vishnu, he takes care of these. And they run on the fundamental principles, you know, as given by Sankarsana Mahavishnu. So with the Purusha avatars, then, you know, Paramatma and the Brahman feature are all taken care of. But now you're doing that because you want to worship Krishna, the person. That then brings you to the Bhagavan platform. Does that work?
Yes. It's the thing that for a pure devotee, like Rajam Srila Prabhupada, he also goes through these different ashramas, but he's always absorbed in Krishna. So it becomes like, it's just like a form to express his devotion.
It's iron and fire. So it's fire. Mm-hmm. We do these activities, but what's doing for ourselves, it's iron. He does those same activities, but for the Krishna, it's fire. Because that's what goes on in the spiritual world. They engage everything there. So you don't have to make a distinction between Mother Yashoda and her mood and her cooking for Krishna. Because her mood is, she's always absorbed in Krishna. So if she cooks, it's always going to be for Krishna. We make distinctions in these things and you know, break down the aspects of Samvit, Sandini, and Ladini. You know, these features, and that therefore there's the primary thing of Krishna's pleasure, Sladini, we're using the activities, some bit, you know, and that to please Krishna, and the Sandini, that these activities then are for Krishna's pleasure, right? Mm-hmm. Means, you know, I'm a servant of Krishna, so I want to use this environment for Krishna. But in the spiritual world, you don't have to make that distinction. You just talk about the pastime and what happens, because there you could say the primary, secondary, and tertiary are all on the transcendental platform and are all being engaged in Krishna service. So they're just features of one thing. But here, because we've taken Krishna out of it, therefore we think that there's something separate from Krishna. Therefore, we separate these things to show that, yes, you can be cooking, but you have to see that you're cooking for Krishna. Right? Just cooking isn't enough. Just because Mother Yashoda cooks and you cooks, it doesn't mean you're doing devotion. You do it to please Krishna. That's devotion. You're doing it on order of spiritual authorities. Like, let's say the temple president tells you to cook. So even if you're thinking of something else, still ultimately it's for Krishna because it will be offered to Krishna. So what you've done will be a service to Krishna. Right, but you'll get more benefit from it if you're, while you're cooking, you're absorbed in that you're cooking for Krishna. Right, but the karmis, because they're not working under superior authority and they're not working under the chit potency, therefore they cook no matter how nice it is, it's still mundane because it doesn't have that connection to Krishna.
Yes,
is that okay?
Thank you very much.
Okay. Anyone else on something? Yeah, the mundane universe created by Maya is one of the infinite external manifestations accommodating space, time, and gross things. Right. So it's the mundane universe, meaning it's in, you know, it's of inferior elements. I mean, element. But it's infinite, like that. Just like the triquadrantal is infinite, the uniquadrantal is also infinite. But its infiniteness is one quarter of the triquadrantal's infiniteness, because it's just one part of it. Like you take one quarter, and this is expanding eternally that way. Oh, the other three expanding this eternally this way, but they're bigger. They're three quarters, and this is one quarter. So it's always expanding, like that, like that. Yeah, and the Brahman is far above the mundane. So we have the Brahma Jyoti, right? It means because they're talking about Krishna's effulgence. But still, the aspects here, because it is Krishna's energy, it's still Brahman, but is inferior to what we say is the Brahman. You know, as the Brahman effulgence, right? That you can see has all the qualities of Krishna's. Means all Krishna's qualities are there, but they're there in their impersonal state, right? Well, when they manifest in the spiritual world, then you see is that they have that all the personal aspects of the. But he's saying even the non-differentiated Brahman is only the external effulgence emanating from the boundary wall of the transcendental realm of Vaikuntha, displaying the triquadrantal glory of Govinda. Right, so even that's the external feature, because there's Bhagavan himself. Then there's his Brahman effulgence. It's non-different, but it's still an external feature. Right, and then he expands as Paramatma. But it's still... Bhagavan is expanding as Paramatma. Bhagavan is expanding as Brahman. Right? It's not that, okay, well, it's Brahman, and then you get to the that personal, but it's actually all Brahman and like that. It's that, yes, everything's Brahman because it's Krishna, but the point is this, everything's expanding from the form of the Lord, from the Bhagavan feature. Like that. Jiva Goswami here explains how the words dharma and dharmi are derived from these personal and impersonal archetypes. Yeah, architecture, archetypes. Yeah, but then you say arch enemy, so yeah. English is not very consistent. Quote, though personal and impersonal aspects are actually only one form, by a manifestation of the Lord with qualities, the form called Govinda, who is the possessor of various attributes, dharmi, appears. By a manifestation of the Lord devoid of qualities, his form as his attribute, Dharma, called Brahman, appears. This Brahman is like the halo around the moon. Digdarshini Tika 540. So the possessor of the qualities is Dharmi, like Avatari. There's Avatar, and then there's who is the source of that Avatari. So Dharmi, he's the source of Dharma. So we may say that Varnashram are these kind of aspects of Dharma or the natures of things. That's not so important because we're Krishna conscious. We're only interested in Krishna, but he's Dharmi. So they are expanding from him. So they're Dharma because they expand from him. So the qualities of Brahman is Dharma because that's all, you know, what's there. And that's the basis of everything we see. So everything has its nature and qualities because it's coming from Dharmi, right? So we tend to make too much distinction between the material and the spiritual. It means in the beginning, one makes that distinction because one lives in a world of duality, right? And so then by making, you know, there's spiritual world and there's the material world. But the point is the material world is just an expansion of the spiritual world, but it's an inferior expansion, right? So we make too much distinction there. And so in the beginning, it may be all right, you know, because you're just beginning. But once you go, just like a child begins something, so they're over enthusiastic, and that's fine as a child. But with time, they'll mature and know how to deal with different things at different times and different ways, and they're not just too overly absorbed. So because you can be absorbed in a more, you know, it's more than just the enthusiasm. So that one sees this duality in the beginning, but the point is Krishna's non-dual. So that means that it's his external feature of Brahman, but at the same time is they're non-different. It's just its manifestation as it's just the qualities, but then the person has the qualities of what they do in the pastimes of the devotees is one thing. This is, it has the qualities, so it's the basis of things being manifest that you can use in the service of the Lord. So in other words, Krishna's there, his effulgence is manifested as he's Dharmi, and he's performing his pastimes. Where is he performing his pastimes? In Braj, right? And so therefore the Dharma then can be the basis of all the manifestations of Braj that you see. And then what are you doing in Braj? You're performing an activity in relationship to Krishna, to please Krishna. And that's the pastimes, right? And so that means that's the higher form, of that connecting form between the two, right? So then you're using all the different elements of Dharma, not just the inherent nature of things, but you're actually applying it, all right? But for Krishna. So we can see is that these features of Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan then are inherently one feature. It's just one, you know, one Lord with these three features. And so therefore you get the Lord himself and the pastimes he performs. But those pastimes or forms have actions, you know, Paramatma, and situations, Brahman. Does this make any sense, sir? Getting too esoteric here.
Maharaj, I myself would need a little more explanation. Sorry, Hare Krishna.
Yeah. No, what's the doubt?
If I understand correctly, then we have the three features, Bhagavan Paramatma. And Brahman, so then they are one, but that we see them like
separate. But they're different.
We see
them. There's one and different. That's a Chinta Veda Veda Tattva.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. But then the more we advance, then the less we will see them separated. Is it like that?
The point is that they're not equal. Because it's Krishna is the origin And so then expanding from that, Paramatma expanding from that, that's Brahman. It's his effulgence that's Brahman. So it's going to be him and his effulgence. Like even in the spiritual world, you see his effulgence. Right? Krishna has a blue effulgence. Radharani has a yellow effulgence.
Yes, Maharaj.
Does that make sense? It's there. It's not that, oh, there's Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan, they're all the same and all non-different. So, no, everything's coming from Bhagavan. Bhagavan is the source of everything. But what I'm saying is because he's Satchitananda, that's why you have the Sikh. So Satchitananda, these three features, are his one feature as Bhagavan. Right? But at the same time, as they also expand because everything's based on his feature, his form, Satchitananda. Therefore, then everything that you means expanding from him will also have these three features. So you have the Brahman effulgence that everything's sitting in, and it just has that aspect of Brahman,
right?
And then you have, you know, as he expands as Paramatma, you know, as the you know, I say Mahanarayan, the Chaturvyuha, you know, as the Purusha avatars, then you're going to see his Paramatma, how he's controlling the energies of that and those manifestations of that. But then you're also going to see is then he's going to have the trans-spiritual planets where he's there with his devotees and performing his pastimes. So then you're going to see the Bhagavan. But in each one of these features, they're going to have all three. Does that make sense? Just like I say, okay, we're going to have lunch. Okay, so that means to have lunch, then, you know, we have to make all the arrangements to get lunch. And then after lunch, there'll be some things you do. Okay, you have lunch, and afterwards, everyone washes their hands, maybe come sit in the room and talk, you know, like that. Okay, but now let us say lunch itself. You're serving people things, they're eating things, they're finishing eating things, they're moving on to next things. It has all three features. You know, you can say, okay, the lunch is your goal. You're trying to get to that goal of lunch. And so then you're cooking, right? And so you do all the cooking and then you get lunch. But then on one, you know, so it in cooking, goal lunch is the goal, but in lunch, cooking is the preliminary, and the lunch is just the process. The goal is that devotees are together, they have a meal, they're nice association, and everything like that. Does that make sense? So depending on how you're taking it, each one has this thing. My goal is to pick up this. Okay, now I picked it up, and now that I picked it up, it's not a goal anymore. Now, you know, and so I'm going to use the process of picking it up as the Abhideya, then I get it. But now I want to, getting it, why do I want to get it? What is the actual goal? Is to open it. Right? And so, but opening, I'll use a process, now it's open. Right? But then now it's, you know, you've done that, you put in your ear thingies, and then now you want to close it. And then you want to put it back. So my goal is putting it back. Or my goal is closing it. So the same thing, depending upon where you're looking, it always moves. So you're always going to have these three features. It's just which one you're looking at the time and which one's the bigger picture. Like I'm cooking, but for what? You know, for the devotees to take prasad, to make an offering to Krishna, to serve Krishna, and like that. So you have these higher goals. And within that, you're going to have all these three. So you're always going to have a beginning, middle, and end, right? That's because there's Sat, there's Chit, and Ananda, right? And so within each of these, they're getting there. So Krishna in his pastime, okay, he's dancing with the gopis, but then that's what he was trying to do. But the same time is that the gopis are all in their houses, so he has to play his flute, and call them with the flute, they're at their houses, then they, because they want to serve Krishna, then there's that mood, I want to go there, so that Sambandha is awakened, that they want to serve Krishna, then they move to where he's playing the flute. So there's an action, And then they get to where he is. So them hearing him play the flute and being attracted, then going to where he is and getting there, but that's all part of Madan Mohan, of being attracted. Right? But it has three features. Right? And then in the Abhideya, they're going to have the Rasa dance, so there's preliminaries of Rasa dance. They start, but then Krishna goes off with Radharani, then they go looking for him, then they come back, you know, and find him and all this and that, and then finally they start. Right? Does that make sense? Then there's going to be the point is, since they're in that, then it's going to be the tastes that are there. So the different situations, the different activities, is just to please Krishna. So all within in it. So each one can be seen in its position, which is predominant. Does that make sense? Now I want to cook the sabji. Okay. So now I am going to cook, let's say, an eggplant sabji. Okay. So unless eggplants are a problem, then we can go back to potatoes. Right? So, you know, then, but now do I have potatoes in front of me? No. So I have to go to wherever they are. I have to collect the potatoes. I have to bring them to where it is. And then, you know, I have the potatoes. But now what do I have to do? Now I have to cut the potatoes. So I need stuff to do that. I get the cutting board. You know, I get the knife. I start cutting the potatoes like that. And then I have the goal. I have cut potatoes. Am I done? No, now it's going to be the cooking. So I put the pot on the fire and everything like that, make the preliminaries like that. Then I have to, you know, get all the arrangements, turn on the fire, everything. Now I have to put the potatoes in the pot, right? And push them around a bit. And then this then gets the point to where we finally have it's cooked. Now it's cooked. Now what? Now you have to make the offering. Right? So I have to go look for the plates and all that, get all the plates and all that are there. Then, you know, I can put the potatoes on the plate and that, you know, making the plate. And then I'm going to give it to Krishna, you know, take it into the deity room. So now am I done? No, now I'm going to make the offering. And then what's the, I'm going to get the bell. I'm going to get that. I purify things. I chant some mantras and that. Then I'm finally making the offering. And what's the goal is that it's there and Krishna's happy. So I'm going to go out, let Krishna eat for some time. And that, and now are we done? No, now I'm going to come back, take the plate, and I'm going to take it back. I'm going to transfer it. I'm going to wash it. I'm going to, you know, all these things, or I'm going to do the arti. So everything has a beginning, middle, and end. And it's all in part of the bigger. So therefore, you could say that whole process that you're cooking and that for the deities, that's all part of deity worship. So it's all part of Abhideya. Right? Does that make sense? You know, but to do that, I'm going to have to get up in the morning and brush my teeth, take a bath, put on fresh clothes, not that, go do my achman and Gayatri and everything. And then, you know, get everything ready, you know, get all the paraphernalia, then, you know, bring myself to the proper consciousness and all that. Then I start the puja. So it's still going to go through a process. So you see it at every stage, it's always going through. That's why sometimes we become confused because we think, no, it's just one thing. It's a dynamic. There are what's mentioned. So serving Krishna, bhakti, is Abhideya. But then you need facilities and preliminaries to do that activity. And what's the goal? To please Krishna. So then you have all three features. Right? Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana. But then within that, you can also break it down that there's going to be, you know, major aspects, some of the Abhideya approach, and within that there's going to be this. Even I want to get the potatoes, I have to, one, go to where the potatoes are, you know, two, then I have to actually take the potatoes, and then three, I have to actually put them into something. Now I have the potatoes. I have the potatoes in my hand, but if I don't have all of them, I can't say I have the potatoes. When I have them all in the basket, now I can say, now I have potatoes. But it also had those three parts. Does that make any sense, or does that just make things more confusing?
That's much more clear to me. So it means that everything goes in cycles in order to go to the next step.
Yeah, but the cycles within cycles within cycles. That's what's the bigger cycle. So the biggest cycle is Krishna performing his pastimes in Braj. Right? And so everything else is expanding from there.
I understand, Maharaj. Yes.
Okay.
So
Yeah,
everything
so the
that's
point is
yeah.
the personal is the original. Then his effulgence is the Brahman, and his avatars are the thing. That's why the avatars were the one before, and now you're getting into to the Brahman. So in other words, Bhagavan is first, then he expands as his avatars, and then you see his effulgence. So Bhagavan is the origin. We're from here, so we have a tendency to look at things from the point of looking up, right? So looking up, then we're thinking, okay, we're here, then there's Brahman, then there's Parama, then there's Bhagavan, you know, and then the impersonalists just stop at Brahman, the yogis just stop at Paramatma. But the devotees go on to Bhagavan, but it's actually expanding from Bhagavan.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So within each cycle, we have these three features then.
Yes.
Yeah. So everything we do in life, material or spiritual, it's always moving within these three features.
Yeah. Everywhere they're working like that. You're doing that in connection with Krishna, it's spiritual. You're not doing that connection with Krishna, it's material. But the cycles are the same. Mother Yashoda goes and picks up the vegetables, then brings them to the place where they're going to cut them. They cut them, then they cook them, then they, you know, prepare them for serving, and then they serve them to Krishna. It's the same thing here. That's what I'm saying. The mechanics are the same, but there it's all centered on Krishna. So Krishna is the center. Everything perfectly moves around Krishna. So you don't have to make a distinction between them. Here we only make the distinction because we might at some point not do it connected to Krishna, and so it'll be of inferior quality. That's why we saw before was, you know, it was like perfect knowledge means it's just in connection with Krishna. That's perfect knowledge. If it's not a connection with Krishna, it's not perfect knowledge. So you can never have perfect knowledge of the material world unless you see it connected to Krishna. So the scientists can go on and on and on, whatever they think, oh, now we know everything. And then, you know, give it another 10, 20 years, they find something completely new. Like now they're talking about dark matter, because the way the physics and everything works, they're finding that certain things don't make sense for what they do see here. So there must be something else that's doing that. And so, and they've identified that dark matter is 90% of what's here, of the universe. So then, you know, they can't understand. So now they're back, they don't know. You know, they get a little bit more here and there, while before it was just like, you know, there's this and that's all there is, you know. Like China, it's the Middle Kingdom, right? You know, that is it. Right? Anything else around is around there. You know, you go somewhere else and China's on the outside edge and this is the Middle Kingdom, you know. So wherever you go, people only see how much they see. You know, the bug just sees what's in front of it on the floor, even if it bumps into a table. You know, there's no perception or meaning that table is a carved wooden, you know, 17th century, you know, French, how you say, antique, you know, of, you know, very high quality and very expensive. To him, it's just something that's on the floor in front of it that he has to go around. So it doesn't matter if it's that or if it's a rock. It doesn't make any difference. I mean, he only sees what he sees. So the point is you how much you're seeing, and it's not a matter of knowledge how much you're seeing, it's how much is connected to Krishna. So it's not volume. That's why the gopis are considered the highest, because everything is 100% connected to Krishna. And the intensity is so great that it attacks Krishna the most. So it's not about what they know and everything like that. You know, so this idea, no, I'll know more knowledge, I'll know more stuff. It's like, until that's connected to Krishna, it's just zeros. If you're connected to Krishna, great. But if not, you know, better you have one zero connected to Krishna. That's more than 100 zeros with no one in front of it. Is that?
Yes, Maharaj. No, I understand. Yes,
okay.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. So it's just the point, because we have the aspect of the oneness and the difference. Oneness is that it's all Krishna. The difference is you can tell the difference between Bhagavan, Paramatma, and Brahman. You can see Krishna and see his effulgence. There's a difference. But at the same time, it's Krishna's effulgence. So you take it as one thing. Right? Krishna and his flute are different, but you take him as one because Krishna always has his flute. He likes the flute. He plays the flute. That's the favorite attendant in Vrindavan. All rasas appreciate the flute. Does that make sense? So that's the point. In the spiritual world, you don't have to make these distinctions. You make them here because we it may be different. Like I've seen devotees, you know, in the 70s, 80s, get right into classical music, right early, you know. But at the same time, it became an identity for them. So they would dress like the Indian musicians. They would talk like them. They would do things like them. You know, they want to get into the technical music like them. But in our kirtans, we don't really have an opportunity for that, so they're frustrated. So many times they kind of step out on their own so they can do their music, because it becomes an identity. So that's the point. In the spiritual world, they all play the music for Krishna, and so it has no other purpose than to serve Krishna. So it's not about the mechanics and this and that, and they're most expert at it. They're the best at playing music. But then here, if someone gets distracted by the music, then you can see is you're not connecting this to Krishna, actually. No, but I want to play for Krishna, and I play for Krishna. But the whole identity and all that as a musician, that's not actually you. You're not a musician. You're the soul. Your conditioning may be a musician, but you're not that. So when you have opportunity to do that for Krishna, like Prabhupada is a master in music. But he's sitting there on the sidewalk in Tompkins Square Park playing on half a bongo, you know, just one head of a bongo drum. You know, most of the time you see there's a high...
I cannot hear you. Or it's just me.
We can hear.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, problem is I can hear myself talking, but...
I can hear.
You hear? You can hear.
Macaruna Prabhu?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And hear now? Okay. You hearing? No.
It looks like she's not hearing, but I will send her a chat message.
Oh, okay. 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 Right, it says here, though personal and impersonal aspects are actually only one form, by a manifestation of the Lord, the qualities, the form called Govinda, who is the possessor of various attributes, Dharmi, appears. By a manifestation of the Lord, devoid of qualities, his form as his attribute, Dharma, called Brahman, appears. This Brahman is like the halo around the moon, right? So, in other words, there's Krishna, and then there's the halo around, like that, like there's the moon and the halo around the moon. That it's coming from the moon. It's the moon that's shining. It's not that the halo's on its own and there's no moon. You don't see the halo all around, and then in the middle there's just a black hole, because it's not about the moon. It's just the halo happen to be moving around, and the moon's moving around, and they happen to just fall together like that. There's somewhere, some time that they start to, you know, go off again. No, it's that. So the point is that they're only one form because they go together, right? Like that, because the form has effulgence. The form has expansions. So they're one, but they're different. So that's the Achinta Veda Veda Tattva. It's one, but it's different. And so because of the difference, that's why there's the pastimes and everything. But there's the one, that's why there's consistency. That's why you can talk here in the material world about the spiritual world and you can relate to it, you know. Krishna has parents, and he has friends, and he has his occupation, and he goes out in the forest and the trees have fruits and flowers, and there's the Yamuna River, and there's rain, and there's clouds, and because, you know, that's what that is here, because it's consistent. That's how Krishna works. And depending upon what's there, then there might be adjustments in those. You get distortion, just like you get, you know, down at the equator, you get, you know, in India, you see the clouds are bigger. Everything's bigger in the sky. But as you go farther and farther north, the clouds start to get smaller. It means you have that, okay, the whole sky is covered with one cloud. Okay, that's there. But when you have individual clouds, the farther north you go, the smaller the clouds actually are. So we get really far up north, like the Arctic Circle, then they become little dinky things. They're really, really small. You know, so it's just, but the point is they're all clouds. And so everybody can relate to, yes, there's clouds. Right? So that's the point. So even though there might be distortion or perversion, it's still, you're working on the same principles. So then the living entities can relate. Yeah. Considering Lord Brahma's position in the universe, his bold statement here that Brahman originates from Krishna and not vice versa deals a heavy blow to Mayavadi philosophy. Should anyone dare to dispute the authenticity or veracity of this text, Jiva Goswami has no shortage of scriptural quotations which corroborate its conclusions. Quote, in the 11th canto, the Lord enumerates his powers. Quote, I am form, taste, aroma, touch, and sound. False ego, the Mahat Tattva, earth, water, fire, air, and sky, the living entity, material nature, the modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance, and the impersonal Brahman, Param. All these items, along with knowledge of their individual symptoms and the steady conviction that results from this knowledge, represent me. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:16-37. Right, so you say, I'm all these things, because those are all, you know, the manifestations of different various features of himself. He expands. That's all there is. It's him. But because he's conscious, therefore, then there are the living entities are also conscious. So even though they're actually technically non-different from him, they're separately conscious, and they have the particular nature and qualities and potencies that they have. Right. So Krishna has. That's why you see the 64 qualities. The jivas can have up to 50 of them nicely manifested, but not beyond that. Right. And then Krishna, then he has, you know, another 10 beyond that, and that means 5 that are connected with the, you know, dealings of the material world, and then 5, you know, other powers and that of, you know, a majesty of the spiritual world of Vishnu, and then there's the 4 qualities that he has in Vrindavan that you just, others don't have, like that. So the point is that there is in quality, they'll be the same kind of thing, but it's in quantity. So we're having 50 of the qualities, one which is less, which is quantitatively less, but it also, we have, even the qualities we have, it's quantitatively less. We're, you know, we have 1/10,000th the tip of the hair, that amount of Satchitananda, and that amount of the 50 qualities. You know, 1/10,000th the tip of the hair, that's how much we have. But it's so powerful because it is chit, you know, we are spiritual. Therefore, then, you know, there's all, you know, the consciousness and all these other wonderful things. But material energy, even though it's also, it's unlimited, then, but is inferior to the living entity because of that lack of consciousness. So it doesn't matter how much material energy you have, it won't satisfy the soul because it's unconscious. And even you say, oh, but it's all so many living entities, but you're seeing them as a tree. You're not seeing them as the soul. So you're actually only observing material nature. So your attraction to it is because the soul is there and because Krishna is, you know, it is part and parcel of Krishna. But at the same time, it says no satisfaction because you're not seeing Krishna or the living entity. Right? So these are all the different features, you know, that Krishna within his, you know, the material energy and within the platform of spiritual, you know, understanding Brahman, understanding the soul, understanding the Supreme Brahman, these aspects, it's all him. And so he say, I am these things, because that's what makes them what they are. That's why the form is a form. You know, that's why the taste is a taste and aroma is an aroma. It's because it's Krishna. Right? Yes.
Maharaj, could one say that, like, the demigods, because they are also just jivas, but they have so much more of Krishna's, how can I say, those... I mean, they have the 50 qualities, but they have that much more than some impious person, maybe.
Yes, but still, it's only Krishna's potency that makes them work. So the Indra-ness of Indra is coming from Krishna, not from the jiva. The jiva is empowered with that. You know, it's just like, let's say, in the government, you know, you have the various ministers. So those various ministers get their power from the prime minister. They don't have it on their own. They're just ordinary citizens. Then they say, okay, now you have this office and these powers. Then you can do it. But as soon as those are removed, your term in that office is over. You don't have the powers anymore. So the demigods, their conditioning may have more, but it's not that the soul has more.
Yes, that's a very important point. Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Matsya as well speaks of the impersonal aspect of the Lord in the eighth canto. Quote, you will be thoroughly advised and favored by me, and because of your inquiries, everything about my glory, known as impersonal Brahman, will be manifest within your heart. Srimad Bhagavatam 8:24-38. Right, so, and then here's from, those with particular inquiries can consult the Bhagavat Sandarbha. Enough has been said here. Dig Darshani Tika 540. Right, so if you, you know, particular inquiries that go into, then Jiva Goswami has said that he's gone into that into depth, because the Bhagavat Sandarbha is showing how everything's coming from Krishna. He is the absolute. And he is the topmost, and he's the source of everything. That's the whole point of it, is that everything is him, everything's come from him. You know, that is the so every feature and how that is, and how, and defeating the Mayavad philosophy that Brahman is first. No, Bhagavan is first. That's the point. Bhagavan is the source of Brahman, and the source of the existence of whatever there is. Then, as Paramatma, he controls all that exists, and what happens, how you know, what's the, how they function, what are the laws governing. So in other words, something has a quality, then there's the laws governing that. Like you have a car, it has certain qualities, but there's laws that govern how the car functions. You can't just put anything together. So you have these you know, overlaying features that you can't, you, it means you can tell the difference, but at the same time, it's, they can't be separated, because you can't have something with qualities, but there's laws governing what qualities are required to do what. And so whatever combination it has, it's able to do a certain thing, right? You can't use your car to, you know, how you say, mix the sugar into your tea, you know, like that. So the point is there has to be the laws of, so that's Paramatma. So Brahman is there, and then Krishna as Paramatma controls that Brahman for the situations that can manifest from Brahman. But the point is why all that's there is simply to please Krishna. So Krishna, he's the Lord of the Icha Shakti. It's his desire. Balaram is the Kriya, how everything's manifested and the laws and his governance and all that. And then Vasudeva is that knowledge of what is there and what is all the different things. Because you have the knowledge of the field, and then you have applying the field. Right? But the point is that field expands. That's Balaram. So the Kriya is, it's all there. But now within that, now you can say, okay, here's action in the field, and here's knowledge of the field. So that's Vasudeva. So Vasudeva expands from Balaram to those generic kind of elements, like what's the mood, it's majesty or it's sweetness, or a mix, those kind of aspects, and in that then which rasa it is, and which these fundaments that you see there. But those things have to be, those are there because they do something, right? So you have a situation to do something. I want a house, so I get land, because that's where you build the house, is on the land. You don't build it in space, right? You build it on the land. And so therefore the manifestation, and there's activities. I'll bring all the ingredients, like that. And then through action, I will put those ingredients together and build the house. Then I have the house. But it all started because I want the house. From that, then you get the land, the ingredients, and then the actions that will perform that. And then for the actions to perform, I have to have certain ingredients. For what the house is, I have to have a certain amount of land. So it all goes to the Icha, Krishna's desire. It all starts with Bhagavan. Yeah. Good.
Yes, okay. Maharaj. Thank you. Very nice.
Okay. Text 41. Krishna's relationship to the modes. I worship the Supreme Lord Govinda, whose material energy, Maya, consisting of the three gunas described elaborately in the Vedas, produces hundreds of universes, while he himself is pure sattva, Vishuddha sattva, which is the cause of the material sattva, which manifests his blissful form, right? So, means in other words, the pure sattva manifests his blissful form, right? And this Vishuddha sattva, his internal potency, is the cause of the material sattva. So that's what we're saying, is that his existence is the cause of the existence of the material world. Right? Because it's natural. You have day, you're going to have night. Then you have what's in between. Right? So in the same way, you have the eternal, so naturally you have the temporary. And then you have what's in between. Right? You have the spiritual worlds, you have the material worlds, then you have the Brahman in between. So does that make sense? So you're always going to have these features, is that the material world, that's why it's a reflection, because it's just, you have the one and then you have the other. Right? It's just that you have a time of day. You have the daytime, you have its opposite the night. So you have the spiritual world, you have its opposite the material world. But it's still, it has all the same all the same elements there. It's just in darkness, while in the day it's in light. The previous verse represents how the jnanis become perpetually tangled in material existence, right? By being absorbed in the Brahman aspects and thinking Brahman is the source rather than Bhagavan, so they get perpetually entangled, right? Because they don't see, no, it's Krishna, and then that's where they're liberated. So that's why you see is the devotee is naturally liberated because he knows Krishna, so he's beyond what's going on here. It means the entanglement to think that the mechanics that work, the existence, the mechanics that are here is everything. And by knowing that, then you can deal with everything. But in reality, no, it's you know Krishna. That's then what's beyond. Then you have actual knowledge, real knowledge. Then you're liberated. But these others are not actually liberated. Temporarily they can get there, but it's not that they can stay there, right? Even if they are so fortunate as to reach that state, after enjoying the Brahmananda, they must fall back into the cycle of birth and death under the grip of the modes of material nature, right? Because they don't know what's beyond. They think Brahman is what's beyond. So activity and all that, they're inclined towards activity because of being the jiva. So there's going to be, in a situation, I perform an action that gets a result, I'll be happy. So they just expand it. Well, I don't want anything here, so I'll give up everything here, and and perform the activities to give up everything here. That will then situate me on the Brahman platform, and having and that will make me happy. But the point is if you've given up yourself and given up everything here, then what is there for you? How are you going to be happy? Because that's the point of Mayavada. You'll be happy when you become Brahman realized. It says, but in the Mayavada idea, there is no you. So there is no question of you becoming happy. Right? Yeah. So that's the thing, is they don't know that there's spiritual activity. That's what's because the Satchitananda, that's that feature of themselves, that's what they have to relate to, the spiritual world of Satchitananda. So they're dealing here with the material world of Asat, Achit, and Nirananda. And they think that, this is a problem. It is, but they don't know that there's a real world that this is reflected from. And so that's why they must come back. Because until you want to go to the spiritual world, then you're not going to get there. Or do something in connection with it. This series of verses thus explains how Krishna is the source of pleasure to all, whether bhakta, jnani, or karmi. Jiva Goswami further elaborates on this verse. Having shown the glories of Govinda's form, Brahma now shows Govinda's glory in relation to the universe in this verse and the next. This verse shows that the external energy, Maya, creates inconceivable effects within the universe, and then explains that the Lord is not affected by this energy of Maya. Beyond the sattva, which is mixed with rajas and tamas, is shuddha sattva, or pure sattva. But purer than that is vishuddha sattva, functioning by the Lord's chit potency, or parasha sattva. So you have shuddha sattva, and then you have parasattva. Sattva. This is explained in the Vishnu Purana. The material gunas of sattva, rajas, and tamas do not exist in the Lord. May that person, the source of all, purer than the purest, be pleased with me. In you, who are the shelter of all spiritual qualities, exist the energies of Fladini, Sandini, and Samvit. In you, who are devoid of material qualities, the mixture of happiness and distress found in the material world does not exist. Vishnu Purana 1.9.44.45. Further details are given in the Bhagavad Sandarbha, Digdarshini Tika 5.41. So he's pointing out as all these kind of features where you're dealing with the material existence and all that and how it relates to the Lord, other than how he's controlling it as Paramatma, then that's all in the Bhagavad Sandarbha. So the chit shakti means that you're going to have the vishuddha sattva. It means that the chit shakti, that internal potency, when you're dealing with the Satchitananda, the Sandini, Sambit, and Ladini, then that is the feature on which the Lord is functioning. Otherwise, the material world is, you have goodness, passion, ignorance here before the law, and that is pure goodness. But the point is that pure goodness then we see here is then would be that platform of Brahman. But Krishna, then he is then beyond that because he's working with his internal potency. So you can call in general the spiritual world Vishuddha Sattva. But at the same time, as we know that there's beyond that, because living entities, when they at the end of the creation, then merge into Mahavishnu, then they're on the platform of Vishuddha Sattva, because there's no modes. The modes aren't manifest. And they, as the soul, are Satchitananda, but because their consciousness is not elevated to the transcendental platform, they're just existing in that state where it's just that tathasta position. They're not on the transcendental platform, but they're not on the material platform, right? So that tathasta position, then that's the, you have the Vishuddha Sattva where they're there. And then when he expands, when he glances, the jivas all go into the material nature. or into the pradhan, and that, and then they're in the mahatattva. Everything means happening in the primary creation. They're still all in Vishuddha sattva, so they can maybe see things how things are and everything like that. But as soon as then the universe is created and ready, then they're all placed within that particular universe, within that particular situation that's appropriate for their previous actions. And now they're not in Vishuddha sattva anymore. They're in the modes of nature. So we can see is that you can use Vishuddha sattva as that generic meaning, the spiritual platform. But here the comments are making the distinction that there's a difference between that spiritual platform and the transcendental platform. In other words, the platform of Bhagavan. Right? So as Brahman, yes, it's Vishuddha sattva. And even as Paramatma, you're talking Vishuddha sattva because he's beyond those things. But where he's interacting through his internal potency, that aspect of Brahman, I mean Bhagavan, that's then the what we're talking about. That's beyond this, the Vishuddha sattva. So that's the chit potency, is internal potency, because then you're dealing with the yoga maya. Yes, no, very good.
Yes, Maharaj. So is that then called para sattva? You were mentioning something called para.
Yeah, and Thomas says Shuddha sattva or para sattva. Means para just means beyond.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And here then, yeah. So then Vishuddha sattva here is there. But so I'm just saying the word Vishuddha sattva can be used to indicate just this Shuddha sattva or para sattva. But or if it's in relationship with the Lord, then it will be. Then we're meaning that is working on the chit shakti. Does that make sense? I'm just saying so that sometimes you see Vishuddha sattva, the jivas are on that platform. But also at other times then, but they're still within the mahatattva. So there's what's beyond the mahatattva. So that's the Vishuddha sattva we're talking about there, because then you don't have that separation between them.
Is the chit shakti not related to that platform then? Not yet.
No, it means it is. That's
oh, it is. Uh-huh. Okay.
In other words, there's the Vishuddha sattva of the material world, which is beyond the universe. But there's the Vishuddha sattva of the spiritual world, which is then under the internal potency. Because the other is still working with the external. You may be out of the universe. You don't have your gross body of the universe. But the point is you're still controlled by on the controller and enjoyer. So Krishna is beyond, any of these positions.
Yeah, that explanation made it a little bit clearer, yeah.
Yeah, so here is generally we're saying Vishuddha sattva. We're talking the platform Krishna works at, with his internal potency. The jivas on that platform are devotees. They're acting within the devotional context and all that. So that will be how it's used. The Vishuddha sattva is that transcendental position. But what I'm saying is occasionally you'll see in definitions of the jivas in the creation, like in Bhagavatam, they will be on the platform of Vishuddha sattva, even though they're not Krishna, they're not on the transcendental position, that they're in the relationship with the Lord.
I understand.
You know what I'm saying? So,
yeah.
In other words, the same name may be applying to something inferior because it's in that context. In other words, Vishuddha sattva means it's pure sattva, it's above the modes. You can say yes, but at the same time, it's only actually above the modes if it's within the internal potency.
Yeah, due to the false ego, which is still there.
Yeah, so yeah. Therefore then, because the false ego is still there, mm-hmm. It may not be the false ego that I'm a king or I'm a beggar or I'm this, but I'm still the controller and enjoyer. So therefore, it's not actually the Vishuddha Sattva that is generally discussed. Does that make sense?
Yeah, because
so
then
the Vishuddha Sattva is beyond that. There is no false ego.
Yeah, that was
false
my
identity.
Understanding also, that if there is false ego, then there must be some covering of the lower modes also.
No, there's just ignorance. It means that there's lack of, there's not the ignorance of the modes. There's the because we have vidya and avidya shakti. So when the living entity turns away from Krishna, they're covered by the avidya shakti. That's not under the modes yet. They're just not under the internal potency. So they're technically under the external potency. So it's avidya. They don't know their relationship with Krishna. Then within that, they take up the particular modes that their particular conditioning has in their particular station within the material world. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, almost. Yes.
Because you have subtle points and you have to be able to connect them. So you have words that are dealing with an overlap. See, it's just like twilight. You know, when it's twilight and it's not dark, you'll still kind of consider it part of the day. Right?
Yes.
But you can also, if you're, you know, there's an activity going to happen at night, as soon as there's twilight, then you think, oh, it's almost night now. Or it's basically, it's night, it just has to get dark. So you can use it in both ways. So what I'm meaning here is that you have beyond the modes within the universe, and you can call that Vishuddha Sattva, but you're still under the avidya shakti in which you think I'm the controller and enjoyer. So you're not actually transcendental. You're transcendental to being in a universe, but you're not transcendental where you're qualified to be in the spiritual world.
Yeah, that overlap word.
Yeah, so it's one of those words that overlap. So generally speaking, it's always used in context of the Lord and the devotees on the, you know, in that transcendental position. But what I'm saying is sometimes you may come across it where it's not talking, it's talking about that twilight aspect.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
So that's why you see some words that may be confusing, because sometimes it's you know, if it's generally being used in the you know, like we'll say spiritual platform. So we'll be from here, there's the material, then there's the spiritual. But when you are in the spiritual world, spiritual is just the platform. It's just the Brahman aspect of the spiritual world.
Yeah.
Right? It exists. And but eternally, then you have within that the activities, and then you have the affection, the rasa between Krishna and the devotees. So that's why, see, generally we say spiritual, that can mean what's going on in the spiritual world. It's called spiritual world. Or we can say transcendental, you know, and that's the spiritual world, you know, because transcendental means beyond the material. What we see is that sometimes Prabhupada makes a distinction between spiritual and transcendental. Spiritual is the platform beyond the material, but transcendental is then the relationship with the Lord. In like that, he makes that distinction. But at the same time, sometimes we use the word transcendental to just mean beyond the modes of nature.
Yeah.
So you have the more generic, and then you have the more specific. So you have to see where it's applied.
Yeah, okay.
You know, it's just like, let's say, we call this, you know, this will be white, right? Then you have that.
Yeah.
So then you'll say, this is not white. This is white. You know? So it has a generic category, you know, it fits in the generic category. But when you get down to the exact details, then you see it has less and less. You know, like we say, liberation, that means out of the material world. In the spiritual world, then they're liberated. They're out of the material world, but they're actually liberated because they can stay there. Well, these other jnanis that become liberated, they're only there temporary, and then they have to leave and come back in the material world. They can't stay on the spiritual platform. So that's why we say they're not actually transcendental.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so you have to see, it's like, you know, how words, one word can have sometimes, you know, 2, 3, 5, 10 different applications, and some of them seem to be contradictory.
Yeah.
You know, so it's the context. So you see the context that's used. You know that it has a general meaning, but the context of being used, if it's in Krishna, then we know he's beyond all that. So that Vishuddha Sattva means working with his internal potency. We're talking about the jnani. He comes to the planet of Vishuddha Sattva, and that he's not a devotee. We know that just means he goes beyond the modes of nature, but he's still under the idea and the controller and enjoyer. So under that avidya shakti, he's still transcendental to the specifics of the material universes, but he's still within the Mahatattva. He still thinks I'm going to be happy.
Yes, Maharaj, that made it much more clear. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, so then you see here's when we're talking about the spiritual, that's Ladini, Sambit, and Sandini. Right, because that's then the actual point. That's the internal potency that is giving the how you say, the flavor, the taste. Right, it's those. It's not specifically talking so much about the mechanics of it. You know, it means you have the Sandini, Samvit, and Ladini. That's talking about the taste that Krishna gets from it. You know, like that. The different features of the taste. Then you're talking about influence, then that's going to be internal, external, and marginal. You know, what's the nature, what's the mechanics of what they work? Right? No, excuse me. That's going to be the... No, that's Ichikriya Jnana. That's going to be the influence. And the some of it, I mean the internal, external, and marginal, that's going to be the relationship position. So that's going to be the existential, the existence of, there's the existence, the spiritual world, the existence, the material existence of the jivas. Now, how they function, then it's within, are they functioning within Krishna's pleasure or not? You know, like that. And then if they are, that's the internal potency. And if they're not, that'll be the external. Okay.
Very clear, Maharaj.
Thank you. Okay. Very good. Okay. So we'll end here. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki jai. Jai Nityai Gaur Premanandi.